Water plays an important role in many legends and myths. In an alchemical context, water represents the female or goddess energy. Thales of Miletus was one of the seven sages of ancient Greece, remembered primarily for his cosmology based on water as the essence of all matter, the substance of which all material objects were composed, claiming that water was the origin of all things and from which all things emerge and to which they return. There are many mythological water beings and gods, stories of heroes that have something to do with water, and even stories of islands and submerged continents lost below the surface. A few meters below the surface of the water, next to a sandy beach in southern Peloponnese, Greece, lie the archaeological remains of one of the oldest known submerged cities in the world. Pavlopetri, named after a modern settlement, was a Bronze Age city that was likely submerged around 1000 BC and was one of the first Mediterranean access points for what would later become Europe, which incidentally is named after a Phoenician goddess, Europa. It played a vital role in the beginnings of Western civilization, with surviving archaeological remains including the traces of buildings, courtyards, streets, and burial places. A recent research project examined thousands of fragments of objects on the seafloor, from ordinary tableware to large Minoan jars. Originally, the ruins were dated to the Mycenaean period, which is from 1600 to 1100 BC, but later studies showed an older occupation date of around 2800 BC, which includes early Bronze Age, Middle Minoan material. It is now believed that the town was submerged by the first of three massive earthquakes, and since the area never re-emerged, it was neither built over nor disrupted by agriculture. Although eroded over the centuries, the town layout is as it was thousands of years ago, which includes at least 15 buildings about 4 meters below the water. From the many loom weights found at the site, archaeologists have established that the town was the center of a thriving textile industry, and there were also many large potteries discovered from Crete, indicating it was also a major trading port. And it was an important epicenter of religious worship as well, based on the remnants of some beautifully constructed stone temples. The city of Pavlopetri is part of the underwater cultural heritage as defined by UNESCO, as all traces of human existence underwater which are 100 years old or more, are protected, which is good as the site is under threat of damage by boats dragging anchors, as well as by tourists and souvenir hunters. The Gulf of Cambat, also known as Gulf of Cambay, is a bay on the Arabian Sea coast of India and is the location of controversial findings made in December 2000 by the National Institute of Ocean Technology. The structures and artifacts discovered there are the subject of contention, as they indicate the existence of very ancient submerged city-like structures. One piece of wood that was recovered at the site was dated to 7500 BC, but some prominent mainstream archaeologists reject the findings as it was recovered by dredging, rather than during controlled archaeological excavation. Dredging implies using a giant machine to scoop out material, which can be very destructive to artifacts and therefore is not considered very scientifically valid in terms of dating. That said, studies performed using sonar describe the area as containing regularly spaced geometric structures at a depth of 30 to 40 meters. India's Union Minister for Human Resource Development, Science and Technology Division, Murali Manohar Joshi, indicated that the ruins of this ancient civilization represented an urban settlement that predates the Indus Valley civilization. Further descriptions of the site by Joshi describe it as containing regularly spaced dwellings, a granary, great baths, a citadel, and a drainage system. So if he's correct, that makes it over 4,600 years old. A follow-up investigation was conducted in November 2001, which recovered a piece of wood, pottery shards, weathered stones, initially described as hand tools, fossilized bones, and a tooth. This time, the piece of wood was carbon dated at an age of 9,500 years old as well. Excavations in 2002 to 2003 found more artifacts, including pottery, microliths, wattle and daub remains, and hearth materials. Wattle and daub is a composite building method used for making walls and buildings, in which a woven lattice of wooden strips called wattle is daubed with a sticky material, usually made of some combination of wet soil or clay or sand and straw. Wattle and daub has been used for at least 6,000 years and is still an important construction method in many parts of the world. These artifacts were sent for dating at Oxford University and were composed of locally available clay, reed, husk, pottery pieces, and pieces of freshwater shell, and also showed evidence of partial burning. Dating came back at an average of around 7,500 BC, and dates this old upset conventional theories, so are obviously contested, as mainstream academia is not that concerned with scientific correctness as they are about political correctness, and pushing a pre-existing political ideology that was established following the Second World War. Heraklion was an ancient Egyptian city located near the mouth of the Nile, about 20 miles northeast of Alexandria, under about 30 feet of water. A stele found on the site indicates that it was one single city known by both of its Egyptian and Greek names. Heraklion is its ancient Greek name, and it was also known by its Egyptian name Tanis, and sometimes called Tanis Heraklion. Its legendary beginnings go back to as early as the 12th century BC, and it's mentioned by ancient Greek historians as its importance grew as the power of the pharaohs waned. The city was said by Herodotus to have been visited by Paris and Helen of Troy before the Trojan War began. According to Herodotus, a great temple was built on the spot where Hercules first arrived in Egypt. The city was a trading port and featured a large temple to Khonsu, son of Amun, who was known to the Greeks as Heracles, who was the son of Zeus. Amun and Zeus are both the same, astrotheologically speaking, as the planet Jupiter, whose 12-year orbit around the sun and path along the night sky, along the constellations, is the basis for our 12 zodiac signs and the mythology that goes with it. Seafaring civilizations used the stars to navigate, and memorizing these stories were imperative to being able to know which way you were sailing in the dark black night. Of course, astronomy also played a key role in divination, as the stars held cyclical patterns by which ancient civilizations timed their rituals, which involved sacred acts which are still being performed by many secret societies until this day. During the time when the city especially flourished during the 6th and 4th centuries BC, a large temple of Amun was located in the middle of the city, and sacred rituals involving the goddess were conducted there on solstices, equinoxes, and other important occasions. Sanctuaries at Heraklion dedicated to Osiris and other gods were famous for miraculous healing and attracted pilgrims from a wide area. The city was the site of celebrations of the mysteries of Osiris each year, and I'll be releasing a video soon which will describe these occult rites in detail, which, as I said, are still performed in modern times by many of the elite who participate in ancient occult rituals but prefer to keep it secret and below the surface, like many of these forgotten ruins at these ancient sites. That said, I'd like to close this presentation off with a brief talk I stumbled upon, which humorously attempts to shed a bit more light on the rise and fall of this ancient, forgotten city.
Hello. What? Sorry, I didn't hear that, so I can't make a snappy comeback. I'll pop right in. In 1933, an intrepid British Royal Air Force pilot named Captain Cull spotted an undersea line lying underneath the waters a few kilometers off the coast of Egypt. Note that Egypt was at the time a British protectorate, quote unquote, after World War I. So that's what he was doing flying around there at the time. The spot we are talking about is called Aboukir Bay, about 30 kilometers east of Alexandria. Map. The line that he saw was probably not lime green, but this is an extremely public domain image. What he saw appeared to be a series of structures, a temple wall, as it later turned out, which had long ago slipped down into the bay. Well, you sure don't see that every day, evidence of an underwater civilization. And this was in 1933, long, long before Eric von Däniken and Chariots of the Gods and this guy and the Bermuda Triangle craze. Those things were way off in 1933. So Captain Cull had no reason to doubt that when he saw a structure under the water, he was looking at a bit of human civilization, not a UFO base. So he passed on his report right away when he got back down on the ground. And almost immediately afterward, nothing whatsoever happened for 60 years. Why was there no follow-through on this? Well, things were complicated at the time. I mean, Italy was invading Ethiopia next door. There was the Anglo-Egyptian Treaty of 1936, which limited British power in Egypt. And there was also a lot of invasive archaeology happening in Egypt at the time in the form of Harrison Ford fighting Nazis over the Ark of the Covenant. So it was a busy time. In normal circumstances, if somebody says, hey, I found a city that appears to be down at the bottom of our bay, everybody wants to hear more about that, and Mediterranean civilizations in general that are lost. A couple of quick examples. The city of Knossos in Minoan Crete, perhaps the oldest discrete civilization known to have existed in Europe. It went missing sometime after the 1-2 punch of an invasion and of a 1500 BCE volcano, and was not rediscovered until the very first bit of the 20th century, which is a long time to go dark. Or the much, much better known pornographic graffiti haven of Pompeii. It disappeared after the 1-1 punch of the Vesuvius eruption in 79 CE. The eruption... This eruption probably inspired a line of imagery in the Book of Revelation. The second angel blew his trumpet, and a mountain all ablaze was thrown into the sea. So this event sure was no secret, but after a generation or two, and almost up to 1600 CE, Pompeii's location got lost. And of course, there is Atlantis, this is the available image of it. Atlantis may have been in the Mediterranean, or more appropriately in the Atlantic, or under Dodger Stadium, or on the dark side of Alderaan. Lost Mediterranean civilizations, real ones or fictional ones, carry plenty of romance. But the one that I'm here to talk about tonight, the lost city of Heraklion / Tonis, is maybe less like a vanished metropolis and a little bit more like what people of the year 2400 are going to find when they dig up the MacArthur Maze from the bottom of the Alta California Sea. Give it time, it'll come. I don't describe Heraklion this way to diminish it, but to frame it as a port of call and a harbor complex standing on the islands and sandbars of a wetland think very vaguely of Treasure Island and Angel Island, plus Alcatraz and the Dumbarton Bridge and some landfilly spans of the Embarcadero piers. For hundreds of years, this harbor complex at the mouth of the Nile was the public face of Egyptian commerce with the rest of the known world. 300 years before Alexandria was founded, this was the flag Egypt hung out to the Mediterranean. So, smash cut to this amazing guy. After that 60-year lull following 1933, enter Frank Gaddido, employed internationally as a government mathematician slash economist until his early 40s, he decided to jump into a second career in undersea archaeology. It's a very easy transition to make career-wise. I am always getting the impression from Gaddido of one part Jacques Cousteau, one part Buckminster Fuller, one part Tony Robbins. He's a big self-promoter, but in a way hard not to admire. Springing into action with a grinding half decade of methodical seafloor scanning, funded by who else? Liechtensteinian tool-making magnates, the Hilties. Gaddido mapped 110 square kilometers of the seabed in Abukir Bay before ever digging up a single thing. There's a lot of silt out there. He made maps, that is certainly true. And by 1996, Gaddido could be methodical, since there were relatively few Nazis to compete with over interpretations of world history. And I wish that were still so. Sorry. So let's run down what this whole thing's about archaeologically. The Nile, flowing north, of course, spreads into its famous delta in the final approach to the Mediterranean. Overlaying here, I will show where in ancient times the main splits of the river progressed through the delta. Now in 331 BCE, Alexander the Great founded his famous coastal city of Alexandria at the extreme west of the delta. But at that time, there was already a thriving port right next door on the canopic branch of the Nile at Abukir Bay, 30 kilometers east of Alexandria. The city was Heraklion, which had been doing well for itself for at least 300 years. We'll see here in this picture the results from all of the bay seafloor scanning that was done. And it shows in tan colors where Gaddido showed that solid, or at least mainly above sea level, land used to be. And the next box I'll zoom in onto is the one that contains this schematic diagram of what the Heraklion city complex used to look like. So, of important note to this group tonight is that where you see the blue peppering, all of that stuff. Those are where anchors were found. And where you have anchors, you have some of which were also found in full shippy form, too, not just the anchor. These are the larger blue diamonds that you see splashed around. So a good 66 ships have been turned up from around this site. Most of them were scuttled deliberately back in the day. This is a much older map of the bay before any of this work had been done to excavate, and it shows where scholars expected to find Heraklion back on land. And this is probably why I really brought the pointer. They thought it would be there, and that it would be two towns called Heraklion and Tonis, not out in the middle of the sea, but on land, of course, which they thought were two cities sort of that lived cheek by jowl in the same sense as Minneapolis and St. Paul, or Buda and Pesht, twin cities. But we now know that Heraklion and Tonis were just the same place, whether under Egyptian versus Greek naming. So nobody could seem to find this place, though. But we knew Heraklion should be someplace because it was mentioned a good 3-4 times in important ancient sources. First of those is the father of history and chatty Cathy, Mr. Herodotus, who never minded passing on false oddities if they interested him, and God bless him for that. So here he is in a statue, and here he is as a character in Assassin's Creed. which tells you that Herodotus was important enough to be both a statue and a character in Assassin's Creed. Herodotus wrote in the middle 400s BCE and is the man who gave us the genuinely hard-hitting, journalistic, totally real, and unrumored story of what was once called the Battle of Thermopylae and is now better known as this thing. But Herodotus gave us a lot else along the way in his wonderful, weird book, like that griffins and cyclopses are real, let alone these ants he talked about in Persia, big as foxes, that dig up gold dust. So when you hear something from Herodotus, you verify it. But he said there was a city on the canopic outlet of the Nile where not only did the demigod Heracles himself once alight, giving the city its name, and here's Heracles for you in super cool mode, showing you how to dress when you need to fight a lion. Herodotus tells us that this city, named after Heracles, figures in the Trojan War a little bit. When Paris made off with Helen of Troy, who was really from Sparta, just ran to Troy, never mind that. These lovers on the lam were blown by a storm into Heraklion, where they were stuck for a night. They made a sacrifice in the temple of Heracles before going on to Asia Minor to start the Iliad. So that's what Herodotus said. But the takeaway is that there's a port city on the Nile named after and with a temple to Heracles. Let me point out that, boom, the temple of Heracles is that, you know, big thing in the middle there. I can never punch the right button. So to clean up real quickly, there were other ancient sources about the city. These would include Strabo, whose geography, I will tell you, is ungodly long. And Diodorus Siculus, whose Bibliotheca Historica was also less interesting than Herodotus. Returning to our contemporary hero, Frank Gaudio, years of scanning the seafloor led to years of excavations, turning up all of the incredible, you know, masonry and statues and artifacts that you would expect from this kind of thing, including but hardly limited to boring pottery and hundreds of interesting anchors and 66 ships. This incredible statue they're dragging down the street in Alexandria. These days, the lost city of Heraklion is still pretty far from what you would call famous, but I did bump into the fact that it now is the name of an annual EDM festival in Egypt. Sponsored by Heineken. I have not been able to verify if this festival is organized by the fire festival guy, but the potential for disaster seems obvious. The big question is, what the hell happened? We have this buzzing metropolis of ports, temples, custom houses, which conducted the business of the Nile Valley with the world for 1,000 years, vanished. It did lose some prominence over time to Alexandria, but the real story is in a phrase that will have a chilling ring to Bay Area ears, and that is soil liquefaction. Interesting. The word Nazis or the word soil liquefaction get worse? See, if you have water-bearing soils or if you have landfill or slippy clay and you set a very heavy structure on it, then it only takes so much tectonically to send the thing underwater. There is some evidence that stragglers were on a couple of islands in Heraklion at the time Islam came to Egypt in the 600s CE, but it was around then that the city's name passed out of history and all memory of its location went dark. People forgot where it had been. No word of a specific catastrophe, and this is more a slow tectonic story than a climate change story, but it was mysteriously forgotten, at least until 1933 when Captain Cull saw it, and then it was forgotten again until 96, when Gaudio and his team began to discover the city anew. So let us raise our glasses to him, to their discovering spirit and his team, and to the hope that someday someone will also dredge up from the bottom of the sea all these interesting spots where we live and work today.
My name is Robert Sepper. I'm an anthropologist. My published work is available on Amazon. My books make a great gift. If you would like to support my work, you can do that through patreon.com. There should be a link below in the description. Thank you for those that are interested. I appreciate it very much. I'd also like to extend my gratitude to those that have been sharing these videos, as I rely on word of mouth. So thank you for that as well. Please hit the like button and subscribe for future updates. As always, I look forward to reading your thoughts, so kindly leave me a comment below. Please have a wonderful weekend, and I hope to see you again soon.